Father, we do. There's not a reason to meet if we're not going to be knowing and learning of you. And these things that we learn are to make us understand you, your world, and to speak of you to ourselves first and to others more precisely and more truly. May that be within us. From you. Amen. We left off with, you cannot defend the truth, you can only stand with her. Truth is her own authority, just by definition. Not religion and not Pharisees. The next logical fallacy that we come to is the argumentum ad verecundium. I've never looked it up. I finally went, what is this dumb word? And it is the appeal to authority. First, that's what it is. But the Latin literally means an argument from shame. Argument from shame. And it's here it is. It's the shame that you don't believe the authority. Who comes up with this stuff? I mean, you know. Anyway, or that you don't have the expertise and shouldn't argue with him. It's yeah, I thought it was pretty strange. Now, not all appeal to authority is fallacious. Where we see the issue is when we are asking, and this one we see all the time, some sports figure or an actor, and they're talking about their deal. When I was growing up, there were constant, and I have ignored them, obviously, advertisements for razor blades. And it was on, you know, sports things and everything, always had, and they always had somebody that was talking about razor blades. And it was Willie Mays, you know, these great sports figures. Now, Willie Mays, I never liked baseball, but he was supposed to be a great baseball player. But is he the pro on razor blades? You know, it's a big deal for a long time. I don't know. I guess they still make Wheaties. Do they still make Wheaties? You know, to get onto the front of the Wheaties box. Wow. I mean, you had arrived if you were the sports figure that got on the front of the Wheaties box. Okay? But it's a sports figure. They don't know anything about, I mean, maybe they do. Maybe they studied breakfast cereal. Maybe that's what. A lot of them, when they go to college, yeah, you ever notice what these sports figures major in? There was one, I will not say his name, fine Christian man, and he majored in what a lot of them major in, communications. He barely talked. What are you majoring in? Communications. You know, he could run a football, though. He got in his way. He was incredible. But he didn't know a lot about communication. You know, he knew a lot about football. But this is the thing. This is one place. If a scientist says it and it's in his field, we should believe. No. It's not so. Does it give a lot of weight? Because the person is an expert, and you at least need to go, well, they said it. But if you've watched any news on evolution and things like this, these people will lie. They will falsify. It happened just a very few weeks ago. Falsification of data. There was a man in Japan that was doing some research. Who was it with? I can't remember if it was Brits or Americans, and came up with, oh, here's the way it is. Here, yeah, this is it. And somebody started looking at his stuff. He'd falsified it. Now, the point is just because it is an authority doesn't mean they're telling you the truth. So, again, one needs to think critically. But if they are outside their realm of expertise, you really should stop and go, excuse me, why do I have to believe this at all? The one of my favorites. I've told this one before, and it's in your notes, is Sally Fields. Sally Fields is an actress, and I don't know, quite a few years ago, she played a part in which she played a widowed mom who took over a farm. And she, in taking over the farm, it was the typical thing, she's going to lose, this widow woman is going to be put out on the streets, she's going to lose her farm unless she gets not just the pay from the harvest, but they get there's a prize if they get the first, whatever it was, down at the mill. Okay? And that's what the movie was about. Now, Sally Fields is a perfectly acceptable actress as far as actressizing goes. But I was amazed one day on the television to see her in front of a select congressional committee talking about the plight of the American farmer. Why? Because Sally Field had played like one day that she had been married to a farmer and then went out and played like she was playing farmer. I laughed. It was a cotton farm. And she and the other people in there were picking cotton. I thought, I'll bet she didn't go near one of those cotton. Now, they acted like they were cotton. Anybody ever met a cotton boll? Anybody ever met one? You. For those of you that haven't, don't. I mean, I'm telling you what. You look back at the old South, and that it was cruelty, whether you were a slave or a non-slave, and you were having to pluck that stuff out of there. It sticks. It's after you, and it hurts, and it's the South, and it's hot, and they played a fine part. She didn't know anything about farming, okay? But yet, they're talking to her about this. Now, there's, if you'll look, at least, page 35, maybe at the very top there. Do y'all have that? Let's weigh the evidence. Yeah. Let's weigh the evidence is one of the King James Only books. And this statement that you see in there, Philip Morrow, listen to it. Philip Morrow was a brilliant lawyer who was admitted to the bar of the Supreme Court in April 1892. He wrote, concerning Sinaiticus, an early text, from these facts, therefore, we deduce first the impunity of the Codex Sinaiticus, and every part was fully recognized, finally cast aside as worthless for any practical purpose. Now, what he is saying is that he does not like a particular, the Sinaiticus, okay, as a text, a Greek text. Okay. He's an attorney. There may have been, and I'll bet, some expertise. Was he brilliant? Yes. Is he a Greek scholar? Was he a scholar on old manuscripts? No, he was an attorney. And if he would have had those other credentials, they would have named it. But notice what they focus on. He was brilliant, okay. Admitted to the Bar of Supreme Court April 1, 1892. And he's saying, I'm going to give you my point. Is this true? Maybe. But it is not proven to be true by quoting from a person trained in law. Now look at the next thing I have. Newer versions often have a footnote. NAS does this. The NIV does not. I was trying to be nice, but the only one I know that actually does this is the NAS. NIV, if you notice, will just leave things out. The NAS puts the stuff in there, and it will have a footnote stating that the most ancient manuscripts say. Now, again, we have the Byzantine and Alexandrian. Alexandria is the older. So that would have been from Egypt. Now, one thing you have to think about is there's geography. Right next to where? Israel. Turkey's a little ways off in a different environment. The Alexandrian, they are older. Older doesn't necessarily equate to better and doesn't equate to best. They're making a statement of fact, and that's good. The most ancient manuscripts say. And what that's where there will be a difference between Alexandrian and Byzantine. But it doesn't, it's only saying it's old. It's not saying it's necessarily better. Everybody understand with the argument? And we, oh, it's the oldest ones. Is it better? Maybe. But we're not completely sure. It doesn't substantiate accuracy. Old, except in my case, doesn't necessarily mean best. Next page. Argumentum ad populum. The argument to the people. The appeal to the multitudes. Everybody's doing it. This argument is old as every teenager. Ad populum argument can be thought of as an ad verecundium argument where the authority is the majority. Okay? And unfortunately, we do that a lot. Advertisement indicates how many people most Americans use. The inference is because many people use it, it must be superior. It could be because it's the cheapest. It could be because it's the easiest to get to. Could be because it's at Walmart. I mean, honestly, these companies fight for these contracts to put their stuff out there. And I mean, it's hard to use that dog eat dog when we got Luther. But it really is a fight. You want your product at the place it's going to get bought. And now, well, it's very popular. Well, why? It's the only one I could find. You know, and what they want to do is get rid of the competition and get rid of it so that they can say these things. But what plurality of usage really indicates is usually that it's the most advertised. When you go to a store and you're buying something, especially for the first time, I've heard of that one. I mean, and that is why, again, advertisement is not about trying to convince you of something. It's to get you used to something. That when you're looking for this, your brain goes that. And you pick that brand up. And this is why, and these sports places, cars. What are those? NASCAR? Is that what they are? You know? And they got all the stuff painted all over them. So that you'll go and buy that oil. And it's just that you see it over and over and over again. And you get familiar with it. And you think, well, that's the one. And again, plurality doesn't mean best. It's not a good argument for something that is truth or accuracy. A majority opinion is not a test of truth. Truth is not determined by numbers. This is very good. This is the statement. I did not make this statement. In fact, R.C. Sproul made this statement. Truth is not determined by numbers. The will or heart of a people is determined by numbers. Okay? Today we are seeing a great growth in homosexual marriage. Okay? That's the will and heart of the people. Now, it's really not, but, you know, that's what they want us to believe. But is that truth? I mean, it's not. We've got the Word of God that says that this is sin. If they want to get married, they get married. But the Bible doesn't indicate that this is a correct family marriage. And, you know, the thing that I want to say is, okay, go procreate. We're waiting. Y'all let us know how that went. Because that's not going to happen. Now, the best statement in all of everything we've gone through so far tonight is what's coming up right now. And I, folks, please hear me. Please hear Jesus. One of the things that this whole semester has been about, honestly, has been about confronting me. And it's been going on for a while. It's gotten pretty serious a few times around here. Jesus said, and I sometimes when we have to do things that are hard, that we don't like doing, we have to stop. And Jesus made the following statement. Not just, you know, now I'll be, I can see the sign now. Can't you see the billboard now that says, Jesus said that if you had to do something hard, I'll be with you and be all around you and hugging all over you. and then it'll have the name of the church up there or whatever. Look what it says. Beware. Watch out. Run the other way. Beware when all men speak well of you. I've never had to worry about that a whole lot, but because all don't. And when everybody's thinking, oh, you know what? Because you will stumble and fall. And I might add, if everybody is for you, you're wrong. Somehow you're wrong. We look at people that are heroes. I'm amazed at this one. I thought, I don't know why. I thought of Winston Churchill, whatever. That distinctive voice that he had. And right after World War II, the Brits kicked him out of office. We need somebody new. Why? Goodness me, the guy just led you. If it had not been, who knows what would have happened? I mean, that guy upheld and held up Britain almost just single-handedly. This is what we're going to do. This is where we're headed. And nothing's going to stop us. He was everywhere. Everybody said it constantly. And yet, somebody found some things out that they wanted to fuss about it, and, you know, we got to stop him this and get too much power or whatever. Oh, yeah. And they believed it and kicked him out of office. They didn't. Never. Not everybody spoke well of him. Well, you know, I think he died, seemed to be a relatively satisfied man. Either way, we cannot have a statistical morality. You cannot have a statistical morality. Next page, humanism. That which is most authentically human is good. That which is not humanish is bad. They, the humanists, try to find the normal and reach the following conclusion. If normal, then human. If human, then good. But again, who decides what is human? Who decides what is human? Huh? Humans. We've already got a problem. Humans decide what is human. There is a minority that decides what's human, though. Who could tell me who that minority is? Yes, those in power. But what kind of power?
Government?
You would think so.
Is it the ones with money, or is it the press?
It's the press. The communicators. Communist China, or these closed societies, they only tell the people what they want them to hear. Oh, it's almost the same here. It really is. Now, the internet has changed that, and the internet has really, in some ways, it has ruined the United States. In other ways, it's actually extended its life a little bit. Because if it were not for the internet, the major news networks and cable and all that stuff, they were taking it over. There was no other place to get truth. Where are you going to get the news? From people that are all going to tell you the same thing. And if you listen, how many of you have cousins that have ever heard of Rush Limbaugh? How many of you have cousins? Okay. Your cousins will tell you that from time to time, Rush will say, okay, we've got a montage. Have your cousins ever heard a montage? The montage will be here, and he'll say, the talking point is, and by the way, you need to know, they give out talking points. Here is what you will say. We can't go back to the 1940s. Okay? And that will be the talking point. Now, what happens? You're NBC, and so, you can't go back to the 1940s. The talk shows on the stupid television things that they have, where they have Meet the Depressed and all of that stuff. You're going to have, what's the VP? Biden. Biden is going to be getting on there, and he goes, we can't go back to the 1840s. 1940s, Joe. Oh, not, yes, we can't go back to the 1940s. You know, it's all the same thing over and over and over again. Why? Because you are stupid. Now, There needs to be about 30-something people that are sitting around during all those talking points that are going on. We've had the logic course, and we're not stupid. We want to go back to the 19th. No, we don't. That's not the point. The point is that when you hear all the talking points, it is not something that you, oh, well, think about what they're saying. Are they actually saying something? Probably not. And again, it is humans who decide what is human. But remember, Adolf Hitler and the Nazis decided what was human. Right now in Ukraine, people are deciding what is human and what is Jewish. And millions die. Today in the United States, what do? We decide what's human and what is not human. Where? In the womb. Kill it. It's not real. It's not breathing. Okay? It's not human. And because it's subhuman, it's okay to kill. Amazing. Moving on. I told you we were going to get into more of these, the NIV arguments. The NIV, the most popular Bible in the world. The most used Bible in the world. None of these is an argument for accuracy. Is it accurate, true, reliable, and consistent? This is not a valid argument. Not given in their argument is that it is the first Bible ever to be mass marketed. They don't tell you that. Why? They don't want you to know that. They just want you to know it's extremely popular so that you will be going and go out and buy the thing. The King James, the Textus Receptus is taken from the majority text. Now, the majority text, I need to tell you, is not the same thing. You can find this in any of these books on text. Not the King James only ones. But if you find one that is accurate, the Textus Receptus came from the majority texts, but it is not a majority text. The Textus Receptus, as we've talked before, is a conglomeration of a lot of Greek text. And they did the research, and they put it together. There is no text that is of the Greek Bible that looks just like the Textus Receptus, period. Nobody has a Greek Bible that is from way back in that, oh, there's the Textus Receptus. It was put together in the 1500s, as we've already talked about, by Erasmus, the 1500s. The majority text, again, notice the appeal to the majority. It's the ones that we have the most of. And so because we have the most of them, it must be right and correct. This is not an argument for truth, validity, consistency. It's not. Moving right along. Until recently, most people used the King James Version. Most, again. We're talking an argument from ad populum argument. Most people. Means nothing. Just because the majority text doesn't mean it's the most accurate. Its popularity has been only, and this is what's amazing, only a little over 300 years. It's been 400 now. Isn't that right? Yeah. I wrote that a long time ago. in other words, only about 1/7 of the history of Christianity, leaving out 85%, which is the majority. I won't bring that up. Anyway. repeating something there in my notes. I'm sorry. Appeal to authority on Textus Receptus versus New Manuscripts is slippery ground. Why? Everybody has their authority. I have, folks, years ago, I started looking into this stuff. And everybody's got their authority. They'll bring out so-and-so, you know, with all of this. And, wow. Well, guess what? The other side has got just as many, and they've got big names. I have spoken again to a number of conservative men who love God. One, a professor at Moody Bible College, he came up to me. He had heard the Eminem talk. Professor at Moody Bible College. Hi, I'm a professor. I go, whoa. And he said, well, that Eminem talk, that was good. I needed that. I said, I'm going to ask you a question about the King James only stuff, and he just, oh dear. I said, their arguments are, he said, oh dear, you know, they're so bad. And I said, I'm glad to hear that. And he said, and they don't hold a whole lot of water. Professor, a Bible professor, okay, and a godly man, okay. Another one, who there is a thing called the International Bible Museum. This guy had a doctorate in some kind of theological Bible language things, and he runs the museum that is all these Bibles. I mean, we went and saw it. Dallas area. It's a traveling thing. It goes here and there. And my goodness, these old manuscripts they've got, and just some of them, and really cool things. Here's the guy that ran it standing there. I'm not above talking to somebody. I said, let me interrupt you. I asked him the same question. He said, I'm sorry. And very sincere people. I mean, you know, he said, I've done the research too. I've looked. It's just not true. The Textus Receptus, the fine Bible, they didn't have anything problem with it, you know. They had a bunch of King Jameses in there, gems. but the arguments that they give, is the King James a good Bible? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about as good as we get in the English language. I think the NAS is better, but that's me. I think the NIV obviously is atrocious, but the fact is that just because you've got a big gun on your side, the other people have got big guns on their sides too, and so we all have that all to a man on the textual argument given by the King James that it has not only logical or scientific weight. Okay, let's see how this works. And so we're going to go more into Jesus here. So are you at Matthew 21:23? All right. When he had come into the temple, the chief priests and the elders of the people came unto him as he was teaching and said, by what authority do you do these things? Who gave you this authority? And Jesus answered and said unto them, I also will ask you one thing, which if you tell me, I and likewise will tell you what authority I do these things. The baptism of John. Whence was it? From heaven or men? They reasoned with themselves, saying, we say from heaven, he'll say, why did you believe him? We say of men, we fear the people, for all hold John as a prophet. They answered Jesus and said, we cannot tell. And he said unto them, neither will I tell you what authority I do these things. Now, so much in there. But I find all of these arguments just... First, what are you thinking? I mean, what are they thinking? They're thinking religious thoughts. I'm sorry. I'm amazed at religion. I am. It is, to me, one of the dumbest things in the world. The second, the dumbest thing in the world is going to church when you don't believe any of it anyway on a Sunday morning. Do you know what I mean? I mean, most people go to church and they don't believe in any of it anyway. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in Jesus. They don't believe the Bible. They don't believe any of the stuff. We know in the United States it's down to 7% that actually believe. 7%. And yet they go to church on Sunday morning. What? That's dumb. They say, what authority are you doing these things? What authority? You know what they were upset about? His miracles. What authority am I doing something? He just healed two blind men. Now, admittedly, he had cleared the temple, and he accepted worship and the triumphant entry, and he was teaching in the temple, and this is what they were upset at. By whose authority? I mean, let's you do the logic. If I walk up to someone, two people that are blind, and say, regain your sight, and they suddenly go, oh my goodness, I can see, the next question out of your mouth should not be, by whose authority did you do that? Walt Disney. It's all smoke and mirrors, and it's special effects. Brother. And it's interesting too, just real quickly, in my notes I have the chief priests. That's an S. There was only to be one chief priest at that time. They were concerned about position, tradition of the elders, not gods. Real controversy was what, folks? What was it? They're asking, what was it? What was the real controversy going on here? I don't have this in your notes now, do I? Did I put that in your notes? Is it there? Oh, what a cruel person I am.
That they weren't the ultimate authority.
Yeah, they weren't the ultimate authority. So they're looking for power. They were jealous, absolutely, yeah.
Jurisdiction.
Thank you. Y'all are going to be so embarrassed. Jurisdiction. I have it in very bold letters with exclamation points after it. It's jurisdiction. Again, the thing is they wanted the elders' traditional words to be the big deal. Why? Because that gave them a lot more authority. They were the ones that understood that. They were the ones that had that. They had, and we talked about this, they had the knowledge, the communication, and therefore had the power. All right? No one heals the blind, the lame, and raises the dead of his own authority. It had to be God. Unteachable and untrainable. Notice that they did not stop him from clearing the temple. Did you ever notice that? They asked him, hey, what are you doing? Afterwards. Why? Because they were afraid. And it says they feared the people. And they feared him too. There was a fellow years ago that we had had a controversy. We had had to stand up for what was right in an area. And he was going to have to be around us. There was something that was going to happen that was going to put him into our area. And he had done a number of things that were wrong, a Christian man. And we were going to have to be around him. And we got ready. Okay, here it comes. And what he was doing was coming into the area and someone that he was with, he was dropping that person off to us. And we got ready to talk to him, and it was, car pulls up, basically kicked the person out and took off. What was that all about? You know, you're standing there, you're ready to gonna be Christian. Firm, but Christian. You're ready. And, boom. So what was that? And the Lord spoke. He said he was a lot more scared of you than you are him. Because you're standing in truth. And he knows he's not. Guilt will just, remember, it's a major motivator. And these people knew they were wrong. They knew it. They knew that. They were willing to try to embarrass him, and that's what they tried to do. They thought they were smarter than God, literally. Their trap was to have Jesus admit his authority. And by the way, let's stop right there. Again, we do not have authority. You don't. When they talk about the authority of the believer, please understand, you do not have authority. All authority has been given to me, you go. Okay, now I understand what they mean by the authority of the believer, but please, authority, power come from God. Unto thee alone. Okay, and it's something we need to have in our mind. If Jesus said that it came from God, they would accuse him of blasphemy. Or if he said himself, they would call him deranged or a traitor simply. Miss Davis, do you have your hand up? Scratch the back of your head, okay. Jesus comes back and asks them the same thing. Now remember, we've talked about answering people with questions, and it is so funny to watch. It is. And here we have the humor happening again. They are afraid of man, and then he asks them a question, and they suddenly go, okay, well, it's only fair that we ask his, answer his first. I just would chuckle at that when I first was doing this study. A good thing to remember is that they are often more afraid of you than you are of them. And again, now, why do, when you wind up confronting somebody like the fellow I told you about a few weeks ago that was yelling and screaming, why can't we have a conversation? Why can't we talk? That won't do. I have to shout you down. Now, I want to tell you something. I find it very fascinating, especially in today's world, that those that scream the most about not having censorship are those that will censor you for what you have to say very quickly. The fellow that came by the other day to check us out, as he said, and he said it twice, he said, "This has given me a whole new appreciation for Walmart." And I told him, I said, "The manager that was here before told me that if I did this 60 miles from here, I would have been immediately fired. All he had to do was do it in Austin. It would have caused riots in the streets for a group to show up and sing hymns in the middle of the guy was really excited about it, that they had allowed such a thing. And when I told him we'd been doing it for a number of years, he really couldn't believe it. Anyway, the world wants to censor us. I've often wondered, why? You claim that, and remember, listen to their stuff, and you've heard it. If we could just all sit down together, and if we'll just, you know, exchange words, then we'll have understanding. If we could just have understanding. Okay, let's sit down. And who's going to do the talking? And they're not going to, wait a second, you get, and it's like we're watching Lyle and his thing. Well, okay, we're going to meet a neutral ground. Neutral ground. Folks, we're at war. Neutral ground, fine. There's the neutral ground. I'm here, you're there. Boom. My bullet went over that neutral ground. I do apologize about that. I've just not been able to contain it. It's war. It's war. And people sitting down to talk to you don't really want to hear for the most part. They want to do what the Pharisees were trying to do here, embarrass Jesus and make sure the people were continuing to follow them. All right. Notice here also the use of complex questions. Complex questions, this is done by both sides. Here's one of them. Have you stopped beating your wife? Answer yes or no. Well, if you answer yes, what are you saying? I've been beating my wife. If you answer no, you're continuing to beat your wife. It's a complex question. Have I stopped? Well, wait a second. Don't I get no, no. But that's a complex question to pull that in. Are you in favor of war or Democrats? And you've only got two, but it's this is the way we've talked about this before, that surveys are run. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. Somehow, I don't know that we ever gave them any money or whatever, but we haven't heard from them in a while. But I guess somebody said, hey, these people are conservative, call them. And so here comes the Republicans. And they're doing a survey. Yes, we want to just do a survey. Now, why were we picked? We were picked because they had been somehow told that these are conservative folks. My question to them is, are you conservative or just Republican? No. They call up and they start asking questions like, and they were really just like this. Are you in favor of President Bush's foreign policy, or do you want absolute chaos in the Middle East? I mean, there were questions just like that, and let's see, which one would I be in favor of? You know what? When I look in Scripture, this is what I should have told them. When I look in Scripture, I think I'll go with the chaos. Because God said He's in control of it all, and that's what's going to happen. So, you know, and it is happening. They find people they want to ask, don't you kid yourself, and they ask the question the way they want it, with using a complex question that is not answerable in a way that is actually going to get truth. That's what they're doing. So when you hear these surveys, please don't be too excited about them. Jesus did this with the Pharisees. Where did the baptism of John come from, men or God? Could have there been, in that case, there couldn't have been much, it's one or the other. But you need to learn to separate the question. The next one, non causa pro causa. Oh, boy. All right. What this means is, one thing, because it happened first, must be causing the next. Okay? And again, this is one of those things that science works on not letting this error be done. In a scientific experiment, what they do is they have what they call variables. And they try to eliminate in an experiment all of the variables that could cause trouble. They set out a petri dish, and they put a culture on that petri dish. Now, folks, you need to cover the petri dish. Because if you don't cover the petri dish, and you've got a culture for, I don't know, a flu virus, but you've got a lab tech that is very dedicated to their job and has come in with, I don't know, HIV. And they cough when they go by the petri dish. You 3 days later, you come back to the petri dish, and oh my goodness, the cold virus has replicated into HIV. And, you know, and it gets out on the news, and everybody's in a panic, running around and killing anyone. If you sneeze, somebody shoots you and runs the other direction. God bless you. Boom! But unfortunately, let me tell you what, this is a lot of times where these things come from. And so what science has to do is get rid of these variables. Okay? Evolution is another belief has this logic. They quickly refuse creation by God, thus immediately bringing their bias into the argument, and then use circumstantial evidence, none of which is verifiable in the laboratory by experiment, and then they call it science or fact. Why? Because the science said it, or scientists said it. Not because it's science, because it's not science. Okay, on to the King James argument. Again, this is technical type things, but I put it in here for you because just so that you could see some of the arguments. Repeatedly it is claimed there are no manuscripts of the Byzantine, the majority text ancestor, before the mid-4th century. This is one of those arguments. Now, folks, listen to this one. The Byzantine, again, from the Turkish Empire, they are not the older. Alexandrian is the older, and they're the minority text. Okay? They have only recently, fairly recently, been discovered. They found a bunch of them because they had been preserved, and they're very, very old, quite a bit older than the majority text. But now we're going to get into some of these arguments that are just amazing that they would say this. That the reason, and this is in these books, the reason that you don't find majority texts that are real old is because they wore them out. Non causa pro causa. They were worn, everybody used them, and they were so well respected, and they were used up so much, they used them up. And that's why you don't find any old ones. Is that possibly true? Yes. But there is no evidence for anything along those lines. And why did they all wear out all at the same time? Anyway, it's because they weren't there, probably. A pretty amazing things. Now, they were, again, they said they were worn out and had to be thrown out. And the earlier manuscripts, get ready for this, and the reason that they've not seen those is because, according to this theory, they were rejected by the early church as inferior and therefore not handled so much, and that's why they were preserved. In other words, the older Alexandrians, that's why they were preserved. Nobody used them. There. This is in these King James, and I'm telling these people, we'll throw this down your throat, and everybody goes, yes, amen, that makes sense. There is no evidence of any of it. And yet, this is what they're saying. Again, the point is learning to think, learning to listen. And again, the point here is logic. Could be there other variables involved? There could. John 9. Everybody there? As Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from his birth. His disciples asked him, saying, "Master, who did this sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "Neither has this man sinned nor his parents, but the works of God might be manifest in him." While sin is the cause of suffering broadly, okay, sickness, death, all of these things did not come into the world because we weren't fallen until sin. So, okay, broadly, but not specifically. You know, Jesus is wait a second, it wasn't because of their specific sins that this happened. It is to show the works of God. And again, they committed the error of non-causa pro causa. And I laugh because there's actually a commandment against that, you shall not judge. We've gotten to a fairly good stopping point here right now. Does anybody have any questions on stuff we've talked about so far? We can go on and go to the next spot there if you want to. No questions? Comments? Yes?
I was thinking, reading a scripture earlier and was wondering, when Jesus is speaking to the woman at the well and she asks him, you know, "Where are you going to get this water from? You're not greater than our father Jacob, who drank from this well, he and his sons and his cattle." Is she appealing to the argument verbatim there?
Yeah, yes. And what was the issue? Remember, he was at the well. Who was he talking to? Who was this woman? She was a Samaritan. Who were the Samaritans? Come on.
Half Jews.
Yes, they were half Jews and half whatevers. And the Jews looked down on them deeply. Y'all are half-breeds. You're not... The Jews were looking down on other people then, saying, "You're not fully human." True. And so there was a great deal of prejudice against them. And what she was doing was giving the argument back that she had been told, "Wait a second, your father, just like their father, was Jacob. You're okay." Okay? And she's appealing back to the fathers. Christians will appeal back to the early church fathers. And this person said that, and this person. I've told y'all I was at a funeral a few years ago, and the pastor got up and literally starts quoting, "As Dr. So and so said," and he probably did it four or five times. And I thought, is this supposed to be about the dead person or your ego? And I wanted to jump up and say that, but I didn't. It was really just, look like a peacock up there. You know, look at my feathers. And appealing back to that. And it's exactly the same thing, yeah. But, again, why? Because the person had been told, "Feel less than a Jew." Okay? The racial prejudice was there for the person, and they were reacting back. "Wait a second, I'm worth something." And again, let me tell you what. I don't care who you are. Somebody is going to decide there's something wrong with you or your lineage or your parents or your looks, your big toe, whatever it is. There's something wrong with you. And the first thing you'll want to do is, "I've got to defend." We don't need to be pointing back to Jacob. We need to be pointing back to Jesus Christ. This is one of the deals that I have. Well, we're a Reformed church. Well, you missed it by 1,500 years. I don't mean to be bad. I'm glad you're standing up for something, but you missed it by 1,500 years. The Reformers are not the people. We're supposed to be looking at Jesus and appealing back to the right authority. Anyone else? A few more minutes before I'm going to stop. And this is very closely related. In fact, I get them kind of mixed up. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. After this, it's not my fault. I don't make these things up. Everybody walk around. Post hoc ergo propter hoc. After this, because of this. This is where the superstitions really come from. This one thing happens and the next thing happens. The sister so-and-so sneezes 3 times. 2 seconds later, somebody gets saved. And from there on, they grab her and they're tickling her nose through the entire session. You know, sneeze, come on. Now, unfortunately, that's a lot of things have happened like that through the years. Sin and suffering. Someone is suffering sin must be the cause. While true in a broad sense, not necessarily true acutely, because we are told we will suffer in this life. We are going to suffer persecution, but you're also going to suffer. Similar stories in ancient mythology or law. I bring that one up because people love to bring up, and there's a movie out now on Noah. It's just irritating, you know, what's it about? It's irritating Canadian. No, it's not. It's, I've only heard that it's awful, which is not a surprise, but they love to point, well, these things were, the similar stories have been found through all sorts of different mythologies and different civilizations. To me, I'm sitting there going, well, folks, maybe you need to sit up and listen. And what they want to say is, the Bible copied those. The fact is that the Bible is older than those myths. The verbal traditions that were told is older than the myths. But what's fascinating is that how many of them agree with, I mean, and you can go to, I forgot how many it is, it's just a lot of them. A lot of Babylonians and Assyrians and all of these other people have stories about, even in North America, a very great flood came upon the earth. And what they do is go, well, you know, the Bible stole from that. They don't know any of that, but they want to make sure that they say it anyway. Ancient mythology, Lewis, the way that he became a believer, he studied mythologies and as a professor, and his deal was that these things in here, evolution, they evolved until it got to the best religion, Christianity, which he didn't believe that either. But one of his friends said, you don't get it. God has shown his truth in all of these things. There'll be a little spot in all of these mythologies of truth that God is trying to reach that people. You've got it around backwards. And Lewis went, oh my goodness, I hadn't thought of it that way. That God was displaying his truth through them and eventually was going to show that in Jesus Christ, the Son. Okay? The culmination of all of these things. Lewis, when confronted with that argument, was shaken to the core. And the more he thought of it, the more he realized this is true and became a believer because of his... Why? Because his religion had been shaken off of him. A closely related argument is common substance means common source. And again, that's used in evolution. That's simply not true. Common source or common substance simply means it works. We don't go, okay, well, airplane tires actually evolved from car tires because when they learned to fly. But no, it's because wheels and tires work. Duh, DNA works. And they're all proud. I just laughed. You know? We've mapped the human genome. We've looked at it. Okay, good. That is really, I mean, it is. It's cool stuff. How does it work? I mean, it's chemicals, folks. It's dead, non-living chemicals. And it gets put together in this particular order, a whole bunch of it, which you thought was junk DNA. Go ahead. You do it. And they can't. and they don't know how it works in the first place. It doesn't make any sense for it to work. It's a chemical. It shouldn't do what it does. Have you ever, oh my goodness, have you ever seen videos of a cell going through mitosis? You ever seen that? Y'all know what mitosis is? Okay. Mitosis is where your cells have to split from time to time. It's where you get new cells. Okay? It's not just two old ones. You know, the cell replicates up inside itself. It's got all these, and now get ready for this. This is a cell. And what happens in this, it goes through these different stages. All of the chromosomes in the cell line up. They line up right in the middle. Boom, 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 boom. It's weird looking. Then out on both ends of the cell, I don't remember the actual organelles. Why do I remember this? That do. And they begin to stretch out these fibers to the chromosomes. The chromosomes are moving around. They don't have fins and they don't have muscles. Do you understand? A chromosome is a pile of chemicals. It's just a line of chemicals. And yet, it's moving around inside this cell. Where did it learn to do that? Those smart cells. And they line up. And then these tendrils come out from both ends of the cells. They grab those things, and the chromosomes tear apart. They go to their receptive, respective ends, and flips the coin to see who's going to pick. And anyway, it splits. The cell splits with a completely new cell. It's moving around in there. None of these chemicals have muscles, have the capacity to move, and they move. Do you understand the incredible? They can tell you all about it. They can't tell you all about it. They have no idea how it does any of what I just. They just. Oh, look, we do. And everybody goes, "Wow, that's incredible! Look at what you've discovered." Yes, they discovered that, but they can't make it do it, and they don't know how it did it. It's not possible for it to have done what it just did. Amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing stuff. The fact is that DNA works. That's why there's common substance. That doesn't mean common ancestor. They've made it to mean that.